Okay, we've got our first guest online, and this is Alan Broughton. Broughton.
Is that how you pronounce your last name, Alan?
That's right. Yes.
You got it right. I stepped up. Now, Alan, you have written this book about agriculture, sustainable living, food security, and it's probably the first book that was put together by the farming community as such to address some of these issues. And you have written this book with Elena Garcia, who's another person who lives. She lives in Queensland, doesn't she?
That's right, near Chinchilla in Queensland.
And where do you live, Ellen?
I live near Bairnsdale in eastern Victoria.
Okay, so both regional people. So tell us, what is this? Firstly, what's the title of this book?
The book is called Sustainable Agriculture versus Corporate Greed, Small Farmers, Food Security and Big Business.
Okay, so what are the views that you're expressing here?
Well, back in the 1980s, there was an excellent book called Capitalism and the Countryside, which was a really good analysis of how farmers are exploited by big business. Now, much has happened since 1987 when that was produced. I'm not an academic, and I wanted someone else to do a proper book, but in the meantime, I've done this one because I thought there was a necessity for it so that people, and I really wrote it particularly for political activists, so that they would have a better understanding about rural issues. Some activists seem to take the idea that there is a dichotomy between farmers, workers and environmentalists. And one of the aims of this book is to show that all three groups are victims of the same system, and we don't naturally have antagonism to each other, and we need to cooperate in order to achieve benefits. We all eat, so food should be a major issue for everybody.
And you talk about agribusiness, and I know we've had major issues with the price of milk in recent times, and a rise in farmers' markets, which I guess is a positive thing. So, what is it about agribusiness that exploits farmers? I mean, people generally understand they bulk buy it, but you've got more details about this.
Yes, well, it happens on different levels. I suppose the main thing is that farmers are one of the few groups in society who have no influence over the price they receive for their products or for their labour. And so it makes it very easy for everyone else to extract their profit from the farmers. So that's the retailers, it's the input suppliers, the big world marketers, and the processors. They've all got the ability to decide how much they're going to get. And if you look at the statistics over time, you can see that the percentage of the final product that the farmer gets is just going down and down and down. I use figures in the book comparing 1970 to 2000. And, for example, with milk, in 1970... the farmer got 55% of a carton of milk. Now it's down to 23%.
It's a huge drop.
It's gone from 15 down to 4.
Yeah.
And this is not... These are not articles that have been processed any more than they were back in 1970. It's just that the extraction has greatly increased.
And how has that been possible? What are the mechanisms that are making this huge drop in survival really for the farmers?
Yes, it's a complicated thing, and I don't claim to have a very good understanding of it. But what has happened since the era of deregulation and privatisation and free trade has come in, which started in the 1980s, what it's actually done is increase the competition between farmers on a worldwide basis and decrease the competition between the corporations. And so that has made it easier for farmers to be exploited. Now, farmers have always been exploited, and it happens around the world. And so it's not totally due. This decline in the food dollar going to farmers is a much longer process. It was evident even back in the 1930s. But so the blame can't all be put down to deregulation and free trade. But that has actually accelerated the process, whereas what governments say is that free trade is going to increase the living standards of farmers. Well, it's actually done the opposite. When the North American Free Trade Agreement came into force between the United States, Canada and Mexico...
Yeah, NAFTA, yeah.
Yes. agricultural exports from Canada actually tripled in that period. So that should have been a boon for Canadian farmers. But at the same time, it accelerated the number of farmers leaving the land and it decreased their incomes. So free trade and increased trade does not, in most cases, actually benefit farmers. The benefit goes to all of those others who are in a better position to extract the profit from the farmers.
The middle people, so to speak.
The legendary middleman. And
didn't want to say middleman, but anyway.
Yeah, well... But yes, what it is in the legend. But it's not just the middle one. It's more particularly the top ones, which are the big corporations.
So it's interesting that this catch cry, free trade, is free for some people and not so free for other people, isn't it?
Well, yes. One of the interesting things about these free trade agreements is that one of the main purposes is to strengthen things like intellectual property rights, which is a protection thing. It's not a free trade issue, but it's always put into free trade agreements. So the free trade agreements lessen protection for farmers and increase protection for corporations.
Mm. So the large agribusinesses are the ones who profit because they own the in-between processes between where the food is produced and is finally on the market stalls or supermarket stalls to be sold. So there's a lot of people who do different things between those two ends.
Yes, there are, yes.
And then that would include what? Washing, packaging, transporting and things like that. Wouldn't that be right?
It does. Yes. But for some things, like apples, for example, there's not a lot of change in that's come about over the last 30-odd years, and yet the decrease in the price of apples is right up there with all the other things, like farmers used to get 56% of a kilo of apples, and now it's only 17%.
I'd love to explore exactly how the surplus value from the farmers gets transferred to large corporations, because if you look at it, fruit pickers and the packaging workers and so on get very little wages. They are that's where you get all the overseas people who come in and do the fruit picking for minimum wages, really, and some don't even get that legal minimum wage. And we know that for a fact, and there's so much articles around it. So how that process of transfer of surplus value from the farmers ends up with the corporations would be a journey I'd love to explore at some point. Do you cover that in your book?
Not the actual processes. It was really beyond my ability, I think, to work through all of those things.
Yes, it's big stuff.
So I just look at the general things and the increase in collusion between the big companies and the amalgamation of corporations, and also the lobbying power of these corporations. In fact, in the United States, it's really the food corporations the broad food corporations, like the big retailers like Walmart and the pesticide and other chemical importers, they actually write food policy. Mm. So they determine the policy of the Environment Protection Agency and of the Food and Drug Administration.
Mm.
They've got tremendous power.
Yep.
And I didn't actually get to find what the connections are in Australia. I know in Australia for energy policy, a lot of that energy policy is written by the energy corporation. But I didn't come across good examples of the crossover between agribusiness and government in Australia. I'm sure it exists, but there's lots and lots of information from the United States showing how, like, executives from Monsanto will go over to the Food and Drug Administration, write the regulations, and then come back to Monsanto.
Mm.
This crossover is very well known in the United States.
And Jacob would like to ask you a question.
Yeah, I have a bit of a question. I'm not sure if your book does have this, but in your book it appears you talk a lot about, you know, how corporations and how, you know, capitalism, you know, is generally destructive and bad for small farmers. But do you have any, does this book cover any sort of accounts of, say, resistance? Because in Latin America, there's some very strong kind of farmer, peasant kind of movements. And I wonder, does your book sort of comment on anything or relate to any of that in any way?
It does in brief, yes. There's actually a massive farmers' network around the world. The umbrella organisation is called La Via Campesina, which means the farmer's way. And that has got more than 200 million farmers in its affiliated organisations.
That's huge.
Mm. Yes, and that organisation, La Via Campesina, has developed very radical policies for solving these issues. It includes dismantling the World Trade Organisation.
That'd
be fun. Getting rid of free trade agreements.
Mm.
Breaking up corporations, lots of things like that, and also transferring all the research funding that goes into increasing the inputs of farmers in new technologies, transferring that to ecological farming systems, and this is because this is one way in which farmers can dispense with, to quite a large extent, the power of the corporations, and that's just by avoiding them, by setting up their own marketing systems, which includes cooperatives and farmers' markets. But at the same time, doing a lot of other things that can increase their power and decrease their reliance on inputs.
Mm. The other thing, Alan, I just thought you could briefly tell us about is how this is relevant to food security, because there's a lot of rumours and discussion about this issue, and most people relate that to increase in population rather than the way farming is conducted. And, of course, all this also cannot, you know, be said without talking about the increasing farmer suicides around the world, not just Australia or some, you know, third world country, but it is a phenomenon that's across the world. So this food security business, what's your take on that?
Yes, well, I do have a section in the book on food security. governments around the world say we must increase production in order to have food security. But the reality is that the world already produces enough food for the expected population of 2050,
yeah,
of 9 billion people.
Mm.
All that food has already been produced. The issue is not it's not production. There's plenty of production. It's on distribution.
Mm.
And it's on the ability of people to grow their own food or to have the income in order to buy that food. That's what the issue is. It's a social and political issue. It's not a production issue at all. And the big corporations and governments keep saying we must have more inputs to increase production in order to solve this this hunger problem in the world. But it's total bullshit. When India became self-sufficient in food,
yes,
and became a food exporter, the number of kilos of carbohydrates that people consumed in India actually declined.
Mm.
It had no positive effect whatsoever on hunger in India, even though India became totally food secure.
Mm.
And it's very common that in most food exporting countries, there is quite a large hunger component. In Australia, the percentage of people food insecure is 10% of the population.
That's large.
Which is quite significant.
Yes.
In the United States, it's 20%.
Wow.
These are people who, at some time, just cannot afford the food that they need.
Mm. Okay, it's coming to wrapping up time. But, Alan, the book is being launched in various parts of Victoria and even outside Victoria. Go on.
The first one is in Bairnsdale. That's my town. That's on March the 8th. So that's next week. There's one in Melbourne on the 30th of March, and that's at the Multicultural Hub at 506 Elizabeth Street. So that's March the 30th. And then there's others being organised for Newcastle and Armidale and Brisbane in the weeks following that.
Mm. Go on.
I was just going to say the book is available from the Resistance Centre at 407 Swanson Street in Melbourne.
Yes.
So you can actually buy it there.
And it's also available online. If people wish to buy it online, it's all the www.resistancebooks.com. So you can also buy it online.
Okay.
You can also pick it up at the Resistance Bookshop at 407 Swanson Street.
That's what Alan just said. Yeah. But anyway. Yeah, thank you very much, Alan. That's an important book for now, especially when you've got the rise of the right wing, which is it's making the corporations' power even much, much more, important to address.
That's right. And organisations like One Nation are actually benefiting from the plight of farmers, really. They're the ones that are trying to answer the call. They don't have the solutions, but farmers tend to be attracted to them to some extent because at least they are talking about it.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Even today, I just heard, over the last couple of days, George Christensen talking about sugar farmers. I'm not sure what the issue there is, but they seem to talk about the farmers, but they do very little.
Yeah.
Well, that's right, and particularly the National Party, which was originally a farmers' party, that is really taken the extreme neoliberal approach to agriculture and other economic issues, which is part of the problem of the farming community.
Yes, they need to wisen up on these guys. But for those who are interested, the book launch in Melbourne, it's at the Multicultural Hub, which is on the corner of Victoria Parade and Elizabeth Street.
Yeah.
That's on the 30th of March, which is a Thursday. And thank you very much, Alan, on the release of this very important book. And we hope to see you at the book launch.
Yes, well, I'll be there.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.